A while ago, I got a job at a small hospital just out of town. I was excited as it was my first job I had been offered since my graduation. It was just casual work, but I was still ecstatic at the chance to work there, as the money was great, and it was the place I did my training at. Most of the time, I would do 12-hour shifts from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sometimes I would work the late shift from 3 to 11. I never cared much for those. I was used to working late for my previous jobs, but I had to drive a lot further to get home. There was usually four nurses, one administrator, me, and the emergency doctor. That's it. Now, being in a small hospital like this one, you see some pretty strange things come in. Some people can't make it into the city, so we've had the emergency helicopter have to drop in every now and again. I've seen some pretty horrific things, like whole families dying from accidents on curved country roads. I've even had people bring in animals in desperation, as there was no veterinarian nearby that was open. This one particular night, around 10 p.m., I was sitting and talking with one of my nurses about a patient's chart, but I was mostly just wasting time until I got off at 11. The hospital was very quiet. I had only checked in six patients up to that point. I then heard a strange noise by the entrance. I then saw a man making his way toward us. He looked pretty normal, but he had on a long coat, which was strange as it was the middle of the summer, and even though it was dark, it was still very warm out. The nurse beside me let out a long sigh and got up to use the restroom, leaving me to deal with our new arrival. As he drew closer, the strange sound got louder, and something caught the light. He was dragging something behind him, but I couldn't make out what it was, although I assumed it was metal from the scraping sound it was making. It sent a shiver up my spine. He stopped at the desk, and I could see his eyes were wide, his pupils big. His face was pale, and it looked like he hadn't slept in a while. I had seen this look many times before, and immediately associated it with someone who was under the influence of something. He leaned on the desk and ran his fingers through his hair, pulling at it and grinding his teeth. When people like this come in, they are usually looking for drugs. Most of the time, they will complain about migraines or fibromyalgia, anything we can't prove to the contrary. I processed him as usual and noticed he was becoming more and more irritable as time passed. Eventually, when I finished up, I pointed him toward the waiting area. He then asked how long it was going to be. Knowing that the on-call doctor had gone on a quick break, I estimated about half an hour. That's when his whole demeanor changed. The anger on his face was obvious as he stormed over to the waiting area, which is a room between the ER and the front desk. As he walked away, I caught a glimpse of what he was dragging behind him and quickly came to the realization it was an axe. I panicked and almost called the code over the PA system, but I didn't want him to realize. I promptly called the police on my cell phone and ran down the hall to signal to the nurses we had an issue. The police would have to come from two towns over, which takes on average 20 minutes. Of course, as we were all pretty small girls, we didn't want to go near him. This man was tall and muscular. Even all of our forces combined, we wouldn't stand a chance. I calmly walked back to the front desk and paged the doctor, asking him to call me. I waited and waited, but I never got a response. I watched the man getting more agitated, and soon he began yelling and asking for help. I quickly hid from him. The other nurses and I devised a plan to lock him in the waiting area. The glass is reinforced and the doors are heavy, so it should have been able to hold him there until the police arrived. The plan went down without a hitch, until the man realized what we had done. He started screaming and throwing chairs around the room. He then began using his axe on the door. We were all standing near the front desk and watching. I have never been so terrified in my life, and what made it even worse was the fact that he was making some headway on the door. It was around this time that the emergency doctor comes back from his break. He strolled through the front entrance, still sipping on a drink. When he saw all of us huddled by the front desk, he immediately took charge of the situation. After getting all the necessary information, he disappeared toward the back entrance, where the EMTs usually enter from. He then unlocked one of the waiting room doors, and then tackled the man when he wasn't looking. He bound the man's wrists together with cable ties and sat on his back until the police arrived. I was so grateful for having a young, physically fit doctor with us on that night. I bought him coffee every time our schedules crossed as a thank you, but I don't think that'll ever be enough. As this was the second incident I experienced while working the 3-11, I decided to never work late shifts again. I'm now on a Monday to Friday 9-5 schedule, and I feel much safer now. Last August, I was hospitalized in the voluntary psychiatric ward at the local hospital due to some major anxiety and depression issues I was having. It was unfortunately my second hospitalization, and this time, I would have to have a roommate. No one knows why, but for some reason when the psychiatric unit was built, they decided to put in double rooms. Because of this, they would often have high-functioning patients share rooms. Since I was here about a month ago, when I showed up, the nurses all remembered me. Stays in the psychiatric unit average about 1 to 2 weeks. Because it's the voluntary unit, there's no actively psychotic or violent people here, usually. My roommate, Jane, seemed nice enough. She was an unassuming, petite woman. One thing she really enjoyed doing was sitting at her desk and work on crossword puzzles. In fact, that was the only thing she ever seemed to be doing. In the rooms, each patient gets a desk and a dresser, which are right next to each other. I was admitted to the hospital around 6 p.m. By 9:30, I had taken my medication and was doing some meditation before going to sleep. I was looking at this beautiful picture of a tree and fence that was mounted to the wall and focusing on it while slowing my breathing. That's when I saw that there was writing on it. I hadn't noticed it earlier. It was in pencil and was put into the picture with enough force to indent it. The writing said, "They are all liars. Liars." There were some other things I couldn't quite decipher. It creeped me out a bit, but I figure it had to have been the previous patient, so I went to the nurse's station to let them know. If you've ever been to a psychiatric ward, you'll know that most of the time, it's terribly boring. I spent most days walking around the unit. Some patients would actually count their laps. Apparently 30 laps equaled a mile. I also spent some time in the art room painting with a group. I began to notice that Jane never went to any of the groups. In fact, she never left the room. Then I realized that I had never seen her leaving the desk. Each time I came into our room, she would be sitting there, working on a crossword. I figured that's how she dealt with the boredom of this place. I tried to make small talk with her when I came in and out. I then realized something odd. The crossword puzzle she was working on never changed. It was the same exact one, with no progress being made. I would compare it to that scene from The Shining, where Mrs. Torrance discovers that all Jack had been writing for his screenplay was, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy." It's quite a chilling way to discover that someone has gone off the deep end. The second night I came back in around 10:30 to go to sleep, she was still sitting at the desk, working on that same crossword puzzle with the lights on. I shrugged at it, because by this point she was no longer responding to me saying hello, or asking if she was going to join the group. It was possible that she could have been having a reaction to some medication, or just didn't feel like talking. So I turned off all my lights and pulled my privacy curtain closed. The medication I was on at the time basically knocked me out, so I was able to fall asleep pretty quickly. Around 2 a.m., I woke up to one of the medical assistants asking my roommate if she thought it was time to go to bed or turn off her light so that her roommate, referring to me, could sleep. She didn't really respond to the person and didn't turn off the light. I ended up just rolling back over and going to sleep. At some point, she had turned off the light and gone to bed, because I woke up some time later in complete darkness. I was confused. The medications I was taking would usually make me sleep for 12 hours straight. I then realized I could hear someone talking. It was Jane. She kept repeating, "Jesse, help me. Jesse, help me." I responded with, "Jane, are you okay?" She didn't reply to me, but she kept saying it over and over again, so I thought she may have been talking in her sleep. Eventually, I dozed off again, only to wake up again at some point later. She was saying the same thing, only louder this time. I knew that she wasn't talking in her sleep this time. I tried to get her to respond to me, but she never acknowledged that I was even there. She just kept raising her voice. "Jesse, help me. I need help, Jesse." I got up and went to go get the night nurse, whose name was Jesse. I told her that my roommate was calling for her. By the time we got back into the room, Jane was hysterical. She was crying out for Jesse and trying to get out of bed. Jesse did her best to calm her down, and I was rattled. But I was given another sedation, and I ended up going back to sleep. When I woke up the next morning, Jane wasn't in the room, and a table that had once been near her bed was now in front of the bathroom curtain. There were no doors because of self-harm risks. I went to use the bathroom, and there was an entire roll of toilet paper in the toilet bowl. Again, I went to go get a nurse, because I didn't want to be the one responsible for flooding the bathroom. I had already flooded a private bathroom by accident during my first stay. When I went out onto the floor, I realized two things. First, there was a medical assistant standing by the door near the front desk. Second, Jane was also standing at the door. The door only opens when someone phones in, so I was confused as to why there had to be someone essentially guarding the door. I found out from another patient who had insomnia that my roommate had spent the night running around the ward and throwing furniture around. They had finally gotten security down to talk to her, and she calmed down, but then stood in front of the door and was still standing there like a statue for hours. I went about my usual routine of eating breakfast and painting. I asked some of the assistants about my roommate, and they tell me that she's been standing there since their shift started, 6 a.m. It's now 10:30 a.m. That made me a bit uneasy, but I just kept painting. I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. I look up, and I see Jane outside of the room, staring in at me. She sees me look up and quickly looks away, but she doesn't move for a good 20 minutes. I get weirded out and decide to go back to my room for the first time that morning. She follows me into the room. I acted like I was just picking something up and leave again, and go to the assistant sitting at the front desk. I tell her politely that I might sound a bit paranoid, but that I think my roommate is following me around. So she lets me sit with her at the front desk. Because I'm sitting there with nothing to do, I decide to call my insurance company with a question. As I'm on the phone, Jane comes walking up with two plastic bins full of stuff. When they first let you into the unit, they give you a plastic bin full of various supplies. The bins were full of her stuff and my stuff. She also had the pillowcase off my bed that was full of my clothing. I lost it. "Why does she have my stuff? That's my iPad. I kind of start freaking out. I do have anxiety issues myself. There were three nurses standing by, and they were flabbergasted. They had never seen anything like this. I'm now on the floor crying my eyes out, and someone kneels down and put their arm around me.
It's going to be okay. You're going to be fine.
I had my eyes closed and I assumed it was a nurse, but in a bizarre twist, it was actually Jane. I tell her to stop touching me, and then tell the nurses I want her away from me. The nurses ended up bringing me into a private meeting room to go through my stuff. They then tell me that Jane is going to be transferred to the involuntary ward at some point during the day. Unfortunately, due to Jane's behavior, I can't return to my room until the transfer is complete. While this was all going on, Jane has now moved to the back door, which opens up into a stairwell that goes down to the garden outside. There's no way for her to open it, obviously, and she just stands there for hours. After a while, I just start ignoring her, though she stares at me whenever I'm in her line of vision. It was around 6 or 7 p.m. My husband had come to visit me, and we were playing cards with another patient who had just moved into our unit. We were sitting in the cafeteria, which was right next to where Jane was waiting, separated by a wall of windows. I believe that she had stood there on purpose so that she could keep an eye on me. As we were playing rummy, we see the psychiatrist come up with two security guards. She starts explaining to Jane that she has to go upstairs now. Jane gets agitated and refuses to move. A security guard goes to take her arm, and then she goes berserk, turning to one of the windows and starts banging on it, looking straight at me and screaming for me to come and help. They literally drag her kicking and screaming upstairs. I was a bit shaken up, but at least she was gone now. I end up with another roommate, also named Jane, but this new Jane was super sweet, and she was in the unit because she was detoxing from a medication. My attending psychiatrist assured me that my reaction was completely normal, and so I start to feel a lot better. The next day after lunch, it was time to visit the garden. I actually really enjoyed going outside. It's refreshing after spending so many hours cooped up in the ward. At the time, we were only allowed 30 minutes. I became anxious when I saw that Jane, my former roommate, was one of the people in the garden from the upstairs unit. So I ask one of the supervisors if I can sit near them during garden time. They say that's fine, and everything goes okay. Jane doesn't approach me at all. Now you might think that I'm being a bit dramatic, but Jane is one of those people who only appears to not be paying attention. However, it only appears that way. When we came back inside, since I didn't need an escort back to my unit, I made sure to break off from the group and get away from Jane as soon as possible. But then, Jane makes a beeline, right for me, and she had to be restrained again. I didn't see her again after that. I think maybe the hospital staff realized that having her around me in any capacity was a bad idea. Something about me triggered her, and I don't like to think about what would have happened to me if she continued to be my roommate. This is a story that was told to me by my mother when I was old enough to understand what had almost happened to me. I was only a few weeks old at the time. In those days, when a mother had given birth and had taken their newborns home, midwives were sent from the hospital to check in on the baby and the mother once or twice a week. My dad was working, so he wasn't home, and my mother had put me to sleep and was going about her business in the house. Two midwives had stopped by earlier that week, so she was confused when she heard a knock at the door. We lived in a very close-knit community, where there was rarely any crime, but most people who lived there worked for most of the day, so it was basically deserted around this time. My mother was greeted by a male and a female who were both dressed in hospital uniforms with security badges, They politely asked if they could come in. They explained that they had been sent by the hospital. My mom let them in because they looked like professionals, with the badges and uniforms. They even knew that she had a little girl, and my mother's name. It was very convincing at the time, but that information was easy to access. The man said that he was going to take me upstairs to check on me, and the woman would look at my mom downstairs. However, my mother didn't feel okay about them wanting to separate us, and she explained that a pair of midwives had already been there that week and said that she was going to call the hospital, as nobody had notified her that someone was coming just a day after. She also warned them that her husband, my father, was on his way home from work and wouldn't be happy about this unscheduled visit. At this point, the two got very defensive and said that they would leave after being really pushy with my mother to separate the two of us. After the back and forth, she finally got them to leave. They quickly changed their behavior to a more calm demeanor and said not to worry and that it must have been a mistake. What was even stranger, though, was that when my mom opened the door for them to leave, there was another person waiting in a car outside who still had the engine running. She called the hospital, and they told her they didn't have any midwives scheduled to visit her that day, and that they would always alert the mother if they were going to send one. They also mentioned that they would never ask to separate the mother and the baby. My mother gave them a description of the visitors, and they told her they didn't have any male midwives at that hospital, and that she should contact the police right away. Terrified, my mother called my dad, who came straight home from work, and they reported the incident to the police, but it never amounted to anything that we know of. Who knows what those two were planning to do? If they had gained access to all that information about my mother, they must have had someone watching the house and knew that my father wouldn't be home. And they had even gone through the effort of obtaining the uniforms and badges. Thank God my mom acted on her instincts and got them the hell out of the house. It's even more creepy to imagine what my life would be like now if they had gotten to carry out what they were planning to do that day. I don't believe this could have been a genuine mix-up. They had not followed the standard protocol, and no one told my mother they were visiting. And they were very rude and defensive when my mother challenged them, which is not acceptable behavior from a health professional. I believe we were very lucky they decided to leave. My mother couldn't have done anything if they decided to use force. I just hope they didn't do this to anyone else.
In autumn of 1995, when I was 5 years old, my parents moved us from suburban Dublin to a small town in a neighbouring county. Nowadays, that area would almost be considered suburban, but back then, it was the middle of nowhere, right before Ireland's economy started to really boom too. They bought a house that was about 2 kilometres from the village in a field surrounded on all sides by farmland, with a little cowshed directly touching the edge of our land. It had a long driveway up to the house, a 3-bedroom 1900s dormer bungalow, and as a suburban kid, I hated the place as soon as we moved there. My parents were into their late 20s, early 30s at that time. They both had grown up in the city and wanted to experience country life, so it was an opportunity to do a renovation. And when we moved into the place, it was rancid. Nobody had lived in this house for decades, and I remember the water running yellow from the taps and the kitchen being non-existent when we moved in and the heating wasn't installed yet. On our first Saturday there, I remember we watched what I think was GoldenEye. Could have been a trailer for it that I remember. I was only like 5, so it's a little bit fuzzy. We watched it though beside an electric heater with duvets around a tiny TV. What I'm trying to say is that it was bleak at first. As it moved into winter though, my parents were renovating room by room and I experienced my first memorable snowstorm. Our electricity went out at one point and I do remember my mum trying to keep me chill while she lit candles and stuff. And over time, things did eventually get better and they renovated the upstairs room first. When you walked up the stairs, there was one big room that we all put our beds into that connected to an attic space, which I remember helping my dad put rat traps in and that sticky bug tape onto. Anyway, Over time, they renovated all the rooms in the house, and it turned out really nice in the end. It was very 90s, with loads of bright colours and a country kitchen and all that. But my mother was really depressed there, and this was the time before the internet took off, and in Ireland at that time, once you left the cities, you only had like 3 channels, and they were all Irish, which in 1995 was not a good thing. She just felt isolated, I guess, and I remember a few times she let me take the day off school and stay home even. I think that she did this because she was lonely, though. Anyway, in August of 1996, they gave up and moved us back to the city. They bought a really nice brand new home right before house prices skyrocketed, and I even got to rejoin the class that I had spent a couple of months with in 1995. In 2011, when I was 21, my dad and I went for a drive together and decided to drive back to that town. And he started telling me stories about that house, and suddenly a bunch of experience that I'd had suddenly made a lot of sense. So, remember that big room upstairs? My whole life, I've had this sort of reoccurring dream where I'm lying in bed, my parents are downstairs with my family over, and as I close my eyes, I can see shadows moving in front of me between the hanging lights and the bed, as if someone is sort of walking back and forth in front of me. And I've had that dream maybe 20 times, I would guess. My dad told me that one of the major reasons they left was because they felt the place was actually haunted, apparently. This was obviously news to me, but my mum was already depressed being alone there while he commuted into the city every day. But that she also had experiences that made it very difficult for her to be alone by herself. But both of them had also experienced the shadows and the lights, apparently, and he told me that once she was brushing her teeth in the downstairs bathroom, it sort of felt a cold sensation, and then the back of her robe was pulled so hard that she dropped her toothbrush. But the bit that really freaked her out, apparently, was me talking to myself. My sister had been freaked out by this too. One night, and I remember this clear as day as well, my parents had friends over, and I was playing in my bedroom, now downstairs, and I had an 80s arcade machine in my room that my dad had gotten somewhere. You didn't need to put change into it to make it work, but I remember very clearly that I was with a girl who wanted to know how it worked and stuff. And something happened, and she convinced me to get some change and try to force it in. I went to my mum and lied and told her that I needed £1 for the charity box school that they had given me. She gave it to me and the girl tried to slot it in. My mum came in at one point, and she was really mad at me, because obviously I'd lied to her. I told her that the girl told me to, and my memory gets a bit foggy after that, but my dad in the car that night told me that there never was any girl, apparently, and that wasn't the first time that I'd seen her. The other time, I was playing in the front garden at the gate, and my dad noticed me talking to myself. He came over and told him. He came over and apparently I told him, I'm just talking to the girl. And I do remember him being like, okay, that's nice, and not making a sort of big deal about it again, that there was no girl. One time when they weren't looking and I was with her, she actually touched me for the first time. And this is the only time that I remember that I really thought as a kid that something was strange. She sort of touched my hand and then just immediately disappeared. I mean, I was 5 and I didn't know what had happened, but one minute she was there and the next she was gone, and I had this incredible need to take off the t-shirt that I was wearing. It felt like that feeling when you know that there's a spider on you or something. I ran up to the house though and into my room and pulled my clothes off, stomping on them. My mum noticed this too, but I really don't remember anything after that. Anyway, the old house, the smells of rotten eggs and the birds constantly flying into the windows were creepy enough without all of that too, but it apparently really sunk in with my dad when he was at the mechanics in town one day, making small talk, and one of the lads said, "You're brave living in that place," because apparently it had been abandoned for years and had been known locally as a very creepy spot that people would stop and look into on the country walks and stuff, wondering about it. When we eventually got back to it on our drive, the place was once again abandoned and being used solely for storage by whoever bought it, I think. It still looks creepy to today, and the travellers or gypsies who bought it, had put a big religious shrine in front of the house. But there were also big sort of beech trees surrounding it, and it had a proper gate and all that, but 25 years, haven't been kind to it, that's for sure.